Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Sunday Sermon Podcast for Sunday, the 8th of May, 2016. Well, you're very welcome back to the podcast. That is to say, if you've listened to the podcast before and are returning, you're welcome back. It's lovely to see you. You look great. Have you done something new with your hair? Maybe you don't have any hair. Have you done something with your head to make your lack of hair look less or more so? Whichever way it is you're doing it, it looks, and I say this as a priest, fine. I'm not great at giving out compliments to people who, see, anyone could be listening to this. You see, this is the thing about podcasts. I could say, oh, I hope you're all having a nice day out there. And there could be some lad whose whole body is the size of a toaster, who's mostly ears, just a big pile of ears wrapped around a toaster. And he's waiting to hear whether or not he's got the go-ahead to be killed. He mightn't be having a nice day. Or she mightn't be having a nice day. It could be a toaster ear woman as well. So I don't like to presume. So I just hope, wherever you are, I hope that your struggles are manageable and that your demons are giving you a break. And if this is your first time listening to the podcast, just very quickly I'll tell you what we do here. The podcast, I do a little bit of a preamble. My name's Father Quigg. I do a little preamble up the start, a bit like Mark Maron, WTF, except instead of swearing and talking about my cats or my latest paramour, I'm usually talking about housekeeping to do with the church, things, bits and pieces going on around the place, the TYs, they're always up to something, so I'm happy to plug. I'm happy to plug their thing, so that's what we do. And then we get into the meat of things, that is to say, we get into the sermon itself, which in many ways, Mark Maron, it's similar that he'll have a big guest, and be that the President of America or a really big guest like Lorne Michaels. He hasn't done Michael Keaton yet, that I would love to hear, but he'll have a guest and he'll talk to him for a while, and at the end he'll say, "We cool," and the guest, because they're in Mark Maron's shed and they want to be allowed out, will say, "Yeah, sure, fine," even if they've had a terrible time with them before in the past, like, say, Michael Ian Black from The State, even if, Camille Nanjiani, who, people who really seem to not enjoy Mark's sort of, "Hey, I'm here to kind of pick on you, but if you don't like me, I'll kill you." That sort of a mindset. I don't go in for that, but I do get the biggest guest of all, and that's God. Every week, God speaks through me. I'm a vessel through which he speaks and sounds off about things, like just having a quick look at the page here. RT2's Young, Dumb and Dangerous, the Netflix series Marseille. God has spoken to me about all of these things. How do I know? Well, I'll tell you how. Because I thought them. And who's in charge of my thoughts? God. So you can keep your Michael Keatons and your Lorne Michaels and all that, Mark Maron. We've got the big kahunas every week here. And we're happy. Permanent super guest God via my thoughts is here every week, and it's the only place in town you'll see him or hear him, at least. I guess if you go and see anyone else who's a, you know, practicing sort of religious elder, they will also be speaking through God. So God kind of divides himself up a bit, but you're getting pure undiluted God here. They say, "Father, what you do every week is nothing short of a miracle. You must be at number one on iTunes." And I say, "No, actually, I'm not far from it." But that's more down to me forgetting to tell people about the show. So we're moving on to just a few housekeeping bits and pieces this week. So the church, Church roof grass project is going great. What we've done is there's a flat, as you all know, or anyone who's climbed up that bloody rope ladder that we can't seem to get down, that's always dangling there temptingly. There's a big rope ladder hanging down off the side of the church. And if you climb up the top, you'll see that the top of the church is perfectly flat, and that people have started to try and grow things up there. And I think this is a fantastic thing, because a lot of the things that are grown up there, vegetables, perishables, all that, they can be sold for profit. And that profit's going straight back to the church, baby. And people might say that's unfair because you didn't grow anything. But hey, how about this for unfair? Stop climbing on top of the roof of my church and growing things. Just leave it. But I didn't. I didn't wipe anything away. I told everyone, I put up a sign, and legally, apparently, I'm in the clear. If you climb up the rope ladder, I don't care how windy it is, if you climb up that and fall off it and die, that's your fault, and there's a fine. Furthermore, if you do successfully get to the top of the roof, with your mulch and your what have you to do a bit of gardening, anything you grow up there belongs to me, because it's my church, and also if you fall off and die, there will be a fine. So whether you fall and die climbing up the rope ladder, or you fall and die just falling off the roof during some inclement weather, there is a fine. So just be wary of that. And is there anything else? Oh, yes, I was asked about the TY's trip to Monte Carlo. That's off. And instead, they're going to go up to the National Gallery for the day in Dublin, which would be equally fun, I'd say, for them. The Monte Carlo thing was a bit of a hoop dream. Is that what you call it? Hoop dream, pipe dream. Okay, yes, I got it completely wrong. Hoop dreams are when you're dreaming about those, about nothing but net, about those sweet three pointers you do be getting. And a pipe dream is a dream that will never come true. So yeah, they're not going to Monte Carlo now. They're going to they're off to the National Gallery. Who knows what headbangers will meet there? As you know, the gallery is right next door to the Dáil, right next door to the Leinster House. So in many ways, had they gone to Monte Carlo, that would have been maybe a transformative experience for them, being in a different country, being around the super rich at such a young age. That would certainly do something to their psyche. They'd either say, do you know what, all this money stuff, it just seems false, that no one here seems happy. Or they might go, oh, look at all that money, I'd love a Lamborghini. How do I get in on this? And then they get a job in investment banking or something like that, something that doesn't require any actual skill, just requires an absolute absence of kind of any sort of conscience. They get into stuff like that, and then you're able to get your own Lamborghini. Or you could go my route, the road less taken, where you start doing a podcast and Lamborghini and Lexus and Ferrari all just start sending you cars. Speaking of which, I will be selling the Lamborghini. There's just no room. It's a good car, I just don't have any room. I'll be selling the Lamborghini. You can come along and have a poke in it, but after the instance with the Finn brothers, I'm not allowing anyone else to have a test drive, because that almost ended up in the middle of the lake with a certain elderly priest in it, and the Finn brothers thought it was gas crack. Well, it was not, lads. And I really didn't think it was funny at all. And the next time you do go into confession, and I haven't seen you there in quite a long time, I am absolutely going to go to town on how many prayers you have to do. You might probably never go back to church. I'll give you so much of a penance. Those bloody Finns. I suppose it's ironic, their name is Finn, and they can't swim. So I had to, if you could picture it, two 25-year-old twins, shaven head, wearing kind of tartan and dressed like Thatcher-era thugs. Couldn't swim at all. They crashed the car right next to the lake, Luckily, there's no damage done to the car itself, but the fins, they crawled out the sunroof and then they fell into the lake. It wasn't very deep at all, the part that they were at, maybe 2 or 3 inches deep, but neither of the fins could swim. So then it fell upon this elderly priest to try and drag them out. And I know the fins have a bit of a, they have a reputation around town for being thugs, but God, they're crying like babogs. So they were, they're very, very upset. They both said that they should have learned how to swim, but when they're young and their grandpa would give them 50p to go off to for the bath halls, for the swim house, they'd spend that money on glue. What were they sticking together with that glue? I'll tell you what they weren't. Their parents' marriage. No, that failed to stick together. So maybe the glue, who knows what they're doing with the glue? Maybe they're making one of those shapes that people put inside bottles because they're desperately lonely. And could have been that, or other things that you glue. I don't know, like a mosaic. They could have been making a mosaic. I don't know. Anyway, that's the housekeeping up the front. Lamborghini for sale. Just give us a shout. And that's about it. And with that, we go straight on to the sermon. Please be seated. I noticed today that in the paper that in America, a professor was sanctioned for, he was doing maths on a plane, and they thought he was a terrorist because over there, if you have, say, a book or an original idea or glasses, they're going to think you're some anti-authority egghead trying to bring the whole place down. Well, that's not completely true, except in this case. See, the professor, he was on a plane. You should never do maths. He was on a plane doing maths, and you should never do maths on a plane. People are going to think you're up to something. They're going to think that you're maybe designing a bomb that's going to blow up the whole world, or designing some sort of terrible freeze ray. You can see why the Americans were so correct in arresting and interrogating this man for openly, brazenly doing maths on a plane. Even though he was a professor of mathematics, still, you can't be doing that. I mean, you're going to upset people, because how are bombs built? With maths. And who knows most about maths? Smart lads who are professors of maths. Throughout history, like the Manhattan Project, if you look at that, that was back in the 1930s, 1940s. There was a professor, Alvy Singer, I think his name was, sort of a nebbish, nervous type, who was on the outs with his wife, and he decided to get back in her good books by building the world's biggest bomb. And he was trying to negotiate how to build the bomb while also working out what is love in the Upper East Side. And at one point he goes and he visits a planetarium with Meryl Streep, I believe, and she said, you're okay, but if you built a big bomb, I'd marry in a minute. So he built a bomb and he dropped it on Hiroshima himself, and within a week it was wedding bells for the two of them. Archie too have a new show called Young, Dumb and Dangerous that looks at it's so fucking stupid. RTE2 have a new show. RTE2's new program, Young, Dumb and Dangerous. The saga of the weird doll concluded last week, or so we thought. But like the hand of Carrie, the stroppy teenager from the Stephen King novel, it's like the hand of Carrie popping up out of the grave to pounced off, I didn't say, oh, no, you thought I got away, eh? Well, I'm here now, still, I'm coming to get you. Whatever voice she had, much like Carrie, Enda's back, and so is the weird doll. Yes, we all thought that Enda's days of being Taoiseach were at an end, that he had given up the Iron Throne, and he was going to let someone else sit in it for a while he'd just sort of hang around to the side. Bit like Pope Benedict, who is in a sort of retirement cottage right next to Pope Francis's house, which is not at all an unusual thing. If you go back to the 1100s, it was very much the done thing. A lot of people might think that might be an awkward environment, having the person who retired living on the grounds, a bit like if, say, George W. Bush had a little granny flat in just off the Oval Office, and he was coming in every so often to use the Oval Office to, I don't know, charge his phone. Poor old Obama wouldn't get a thing done. And so it's... Thankfully, that did not befall Enda Kenny. Enda is now back in. He's the Taoiseach. He's got the Taoiseach's ring, the Taoiseach cape. He's been given the Taoiseach's house, which is to say, I think it's a flat somewhere. And it's the bitch is back, if you'll excuse my quoting Elton John. He's back. And he's going nowhere soon, and he had to pick a new cabinet, and this is where things really got disappointing. Mick Lowry, my best friend, he was hoping to get the nod of Taoiseach or social protection, or at the very least, the diaspora, and nothing. He didn't get anything at all. No, in his infinite wisdom, Simon Harris, a 29-year-old. Was put in charge of the health brief, so Enda Kenny must have a lot of faith in him, because the two former ministers for health, Varadkar and Riley, they're both doctors who couldn't make head nor tail of what to do with health. So I think somebody who's 29, who has no job in his life ever outside of politics, I think they're just the person to be able to come in and look at this very complicated situation and make it work again. Because I don't know if you've spoken to any 29-year-olds lately, but they are cool, man. They're very cool dudes. They can do a lot more than they could. When I was 29, I was just a newly graduated priest in Hawaii, helping to build what would turn out to be the world's biggest skate park. That's what I was up to. But now you talk to most 29-year-olds and nowadays, and a lot of them, it's not uncommon for them not to have a job because of the big dip that happened in what I like to call 1929 Part 3. That is to say, in 2007, when everything went tits up and a lot of people were just out of college and thought that the world was a bright and happy place before they heard the words jobs bridge and unpaid internship and things like that, while simultaneously being condescended to by the people, the generation that had allowed the mess to happen. In many ways, I hope that does not happen for young Simon Harris. It's tough to get a job at all. So I think a 29-year-old in charge of the health portfolio, a 29-year-old who's never had a job before apart from stuff in politics, who's I think he's just the person to be able to crack that nut. It's not at all like Enda Kenny setting him up for an enormous failure. It's not like, say you're friends with, just off the top of my head, say like Catherine Zeta-Jones, right? Say you're friends with Catherine Zeta-Jones, and she said, look, I'm leaving Michael Douglas. I don't like him anymore. He's gotten big into storage wars. That's all he watches. I'm bored of it. I can't be watching storage wars with Michael Douglas all day and him saying, oh, come in here. Barry from Storage Wars is about to do something endearing. He's like, no, I want out of that. What I'm asking for you, Quigg, and in this situation, if you're still following me, This is Catherine Zeta-Jones, my friend, talking to me, saying, what I'm looking for is a real man, looking for somebody who can really excite me and show me a thing or two about life. And that would be like me saying, oh, I know someone. I know just the person to try and please you, a woman of the world, an Academy Award winner, Welsh lady, knows a thing or two about a thing or two. I know exactly who will get your motor going. I know this 29-year-old TD, Simon Harris, and he looks like he really knows how to be good at making love. And it's like setting up the two of them. And maybe, I don't know, telling Catherine Zeta-Jones ahead of time that Simon Harris has an All-Ireland in lovemaking. And the reality of it, I don't know much about Simon Harris's personal life, but he Studley Do-Right doesn't seem to be a nickname that would pop to mind when thinking about Simon. So I doubt he could please Catherine Zeta-Jones, and I doubt he's going to be able to please the Irish people. But good on me / Enda Kenny for giving him the opportunity, because you never know. A few of the TYs were telling me this week that Justin Bieber got a tiny face tattoo, which is always, I find in my life, people with face tattoos and neck tattoos, those are the people who are good at exercising long-term good decision-making skills. Why wouldn't you get BB-8 tattooed on your neck? I mean, everyone's going to love that thing forever. There never come a point where somebody 50 years from now might look at that and say, your tattoo of a golf ball looks infected. What are you, oh, your neck. No one's going to say that because, as we know, things stay popular forever. And Justin Bieber with his little, tiny little old face tattoo. It's only little, though, so he can cover it up if he wants. He could put a plaster on it like Nelly. He could cut it off his face, probably. It's that small. But the fact that he went and got that tiny face tattoo means, you know, that say if things go badly for him, he won't have, say, a job in Subway or something to fall back on. I don't think they allow you to have face tattoos there. Another famous face tattoo haver, Sinead O'Connor, was in the news this week for accusing Arsenio Hall of being Prince's drug dealer. Now, not to make light of things that have happened to Sinead, she seems to have had a very, very tough life, and that every man she's ever been in contact with has either let her down or, you know, led to her being let down. She seems to have had a terrible, terrible time. The filmmaker Jim Sheridan apparently tried it on. That's disgusting. He's gross. But she accused Arsenio Hall of giving loads of drugs and to Prince, and that led to Prince dying. Now, her evidence for this was based back in the early 90s, the last time she met Prince. Prince, a man that she had got into a physical fist fight with. I wouldn't like to have been Prince that day. I'd say Sinead knows her way around an old southpaw. But now she's on Facebook. She accused Arsenio Hall of being a drug dealer. Sinead's accusation of Arsenio Hall dealing drugs did call to mind when Owen Wilson almost killed himself, and Courtney Love, a kind, even-tempered lady from the band Hole, she said that Steve Coogan, the multi-millionaire comedian, was making some money on the side selling drugs to Owen Wilson. So that's how he was, that's what he was up to. And Steve Coogan denied it, of course. Why wouldn't he? But the swift hammer of justice wasn't far behind. And from what I can recall, Courtney Love made a very impassioned speech in court with her solicitor, Edward Norton, and Coogan got the chair. The Mayor of London Awards were on this week, and the award for the best Mayor of London went to Sadiq Khan, who is a Labour politician, and he's a lad who, if you were to see him talk, you go, that lad seems to be pretty disappointed in himself at the best of times. It's the quality that I quite like in people. Not necessarily mayors. Will he be as good as mayor as Mayor Boris Johnson? He was a great lad. I had my suspicions about all of his dealings, but I actually was sitting next to Boris at a mutual friend's funeral a while ago, and I raised some of these concerns, and he told me that not only were they unfounded, but that he was actually technically the best that there ever will be. So that's good to know. But good old Sadiq Khan, he got in there now. Maybe Boris will be allowed live on the grounds like a Pope Benedict type, popping in to... do you have the channels? Oh, I don't have the foreign channels. I wanted to watch a thing on railways, that sort of a thing. And Sadiq will say, no, I'm trying to rebrand Boris bikes, Can bikes or Bicycans. Go away, Boris. Come back another time, and I'll record it for you if you like, and I can send it to you later on. That's grand, said Boris. That'll be fine for me. But it did remind me a lot about this new Netflix show, Marseille, I've been watching. Marseille, for those of you who haven't seen it, it's a cross between House of Cards and Hello, Hello. It's the government, French style, so everything's very... creppery and kind of romantic, and people are getting revenge through romance. For example, if you were in Marseille and say if you were a lady and you went in to get some butternut squash from a butternut squash wholesaler, and the butternut squash wholesaler was not nice to you, you would then have an affair with the butternut squash wholesaler's husband to get back at them, and then you would bump into the wholesaler of the butternut squash who had wronged you in the lift of their gorgeous apartment complex, and you'd be leaving the lift and they'd be getting in, and there might be a wry look between them. And that's really how they do things in Marseille. Tit for tat over there. And reminded me a bit of Sadiq and Boris, or Francis and Benedict, or maybe even poor old Enda and Simon. That is to say, poor old Simon Harris and Enda Kenny, kind of setting him up for the fall. But we don't know the difference here. You know, in Ireland, we're not as petty as that. We're not as snipey as that. If somebody wrongs you, you never talk to them ever again, and spread terrible rumours about them. We know how to conduct things. Whereas in France, the amount of adultery going on there, I tell you what, I don't think that commandment reached them. The adultery commandment, I think they've got left off. I think they think the 10th commandment is, thou shalt not be dressed to the nines every time you leave the house. I think that's what they think the adultery one is. But let me remind you all, adultery's still in there, along with the one about you can't shoot kangaroos or stab them even. That's still there. Thou must not play bagpipes. That's still there. If the person collecting the tax has the wrong house, they have to pay the tax that they would have been collecting from that house to the other house. So all those commandments are still there, lads. They're all still there, and we need to keep following them all, because otherwise it's going to be anarchy. We can't be up to the mess and the rat in Marseille. We'd get nothing done. God knows what they're up to over there, where there'd be two couples living in two double-sized bunk beds, and someone's the boss, but it changes, it rotates. Not for us. So if you take anything from this at all this week, it's don't be like France. And also, make sure you watch RT2's Young, Dumb and Dangerous, which looks like a great show. 3 episodes looking at the epidemic of people fighting outside pubs. So that looks like a fantastic piece of television from the national broadcaster. So make sure you look out for that. And that's it for this week. So I ask you all now, just please rise for the homily. You've been listening to the Sunday Sermon Podcast by Giles Brodie. You can follow me on Twitter at Giles Brodie, and I'm also on Facebook. I'm doing a show, The Mess Around. It's a monthly sketch show I host with my friend Colin Chadwick, and we've got lots of funny people that are going to be doing the gig. It's going to be on the 14th of May at the Vintage Room in the Workman's Club, Dublin City. It would be very nice if you could go to iTunes and just give us a nice review and write something about it. It would really help out the podcast. So thank you very much. Special thanks to Conor O'Toole, Emma Keaveney, and Dermot O'Brien. The amount of adultery going on there. I tell you what, I don't think that commandment reached them. Also, if you enjoyed the podcast, please tell people about it and share it on your social media.